Morning, everybody. Actually have a pretty nice crowd this morning. It's kind of surprising, but it's great. Let me just get this turned on here. Awesome. Okay. So this morning's lesson would seem kind of very light at first, very not so serious, but it's actually very serious indeed. It's something we need to be thinking about every day in our lives, that this is probably actually a pretty bad title for the lesson, Rightly Dividing the Word of Truth, but it's the basis for what I'm going to talk about. It's basically like there are certain sins, I think, or possible sins that Christians overlook sometimes, I think, and it's hard to see these things for different reasons. Just simple things that seem kind of like, oh, that's obvious, but we don't really think about these things all the time. So that's basically what I'm going to talk about today. And so I kind of divide it into three main points here. First is kind of a basis. It's when does God's law go above and beyond or differ from the written law? And that could be the old law, the written law of the land, the government's law, those sorts of things. So we need to establish a basis for how we are to act in accordance with that law and different from that law. And then second, this, I'm going to use this pointer here. Oh, that's great. the second point's the main point. I'm going to provide some examples from my own life that I've seen. And that's kind of what got me thinking about this and what made me want to do this sermon. Just some easy examples that we can see maybe we haven't been exactly following what we're supposed to. And the reason for this is that we have to be examples for other people. Other people are watching everything we do. And I think we sometimes forget that. And so that's basically the reason for all this. So going on to the first point, just as kind of a background, I'd like to look at a few verses to establish this point. First, in the book of 2 Corinthians, this is the pure basis. And in chapter 3 there. In verse 2, it says, "You are our epistle, written in our hearts, known and read by all men. Clearly, you are an epistle of Christ, ministered by us, written not with ink, but by the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of flesh, that is, of the heart." So we know the law is written in our hearts, not essentially on tablets of stone like they had in the old law. It's a more mental aspect of it, and that's the key. It's not simply a checklist, things you have to do. It's you have to control your mind as well as your physical actions. That's basically the basis of that. Matthew 5 is the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount's got several awesome examples of the difference between the old law and the new law, essentially. And just to read a few here, I have a few listed here. Just to go through, verses 27 and 28 talk about adultery. You know, you have heard of old, you shall not commit adultery, but now you can't even look upon someone with lust. Otherwise, you have committed adultery in your heart. The heart's the main part there. You have already committed it in your mind because you're not controlling your mind that way. Verses 31 to 32 talk about divorce. So used to, it was just, if you're going to divorce, do it through legal means. But now he's saying you can't divorce at all for any other reason besides sexual immorality. Starting verse 33 talks about swearing falsely. Used to, it was just that you couldn't swear falsely. But now it's that you're not supposed to swear at all and that your yes should be enough. It's that attitude that your yes should be yes and your no should be no. You have to keep that because that will prevent you from having to swear. Continue on into verse 38. You have heard that it was said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. He's saying, whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other cheek, and if anyone wants to sue you, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. So it's not this aspect of eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. It's not basic exact fairness, but we have to have a different attitude in that aspect. And then finally, continuing on, verse verse 43 to 44, that was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. I mean, that's the logical conclusion, right? You should love your neighbor, but your enemy, well, why should you love your enemy? But this is a different attitude we have to have, that you should love your enemy also. So those are just some examples, some concrete examples of where God's law differs from the old law or the written law. The law they've heard before, the law they've been indoctrinated to believe. Matthew chapter 6, verses 1 through 18, don't worry, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Basically, this is talking about when you're doing your charitable deeds, when you're praying, when you're fasting, don't do it before men. It's that attitude that I don't have to be seen by men, which has that attitude of humility, that I have to control my body in that way to make sure I don't have to, you know, be seen by other men. I don't have to have that satisfaction that my reward is in heaven. That's that internal control we have to have. Let's go to 1 Corinthians really quickly. Chapter 16. And the first two verses talk about the contribution, the collection. Now concerning the collection of the saints, I have given orders to the churches of Galatia so that you must do also. Now on the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. So this is a different attitude. You see they would tithe 10%. But now it's as you may prosper, whatever you prosper in your heart. So that requires a different attitude as well from the, okay, it's a checklist, I just have to do 10% of this. We saw this with the Pharisee who was saying, oh, I tithe, you know, I tithe everything and everything. But that's not necessarily the most important part. It's the mind, your emotions, your actions there with that are the most important part. And then finally, let's go to Mark chapter 10. And in verses 17 to 23, it says, now as he was going on the road, one came running, knelt before him, and asked him, good teacher, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life? And Jesus said to him, why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. You know the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not murder. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Do not defraud. Honor your father and your mother. And he answered and said to him, teacher, all these things I have kept in my youth. Then Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, one thing you lack. Go your way, sell whatever you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come, take up the cross and follow me. But he was sad at this word and went sorrowful, for he had great possessions. So here's a great example of someone who had done everything. He had followed the rules, quote unquote, but he still didn't have the right attitude, the right mindset. And that's, I think, the main difference between the law and God's law. You have to have the right attitude, the right mindset when approaching these things. And I believe Brother Dan had a good lesson about this, about legalism is not necessarily applicable to God's law. It's that the law is the law. But he says we have to have the right approach to it. I think that's important. So all of these verses may seem to have a theme, may not, but three points I want to make about this. If you don't ask for this, the point of this is that it's a very tall order for us. This is a very tall order to make sure we're controlling both our bodies, our physical actions, and our minds as well. So we have a very daunting task in front of us. And three things we need to remember about this are like, I see this as like political socialization kind of. It's interesting if you look in history. Of course, I have to add something about history and everything, right? But if you look in history, it's interesting to see that, like, the United States is, as far as I know, the only industrialized country that was founded not by a particular cultural group, but on a set of values and ideas and beliefs. So, you know, France, French people, English people, German people, Russians, Asians, Africans. Americans are not a specific race of people. Americans are people with a certain ideological, value-based society, they essentially are. So these values that connect us are taught in schools year after year after year, and we get indoctrinated with these things. And some of these values are great, equality, justice, those things. Some of them are so indoctrinated with it, I think, that we pay attention to those more than God's. For instance, like individualism versus communal fellowship. In certain instances, the Bible teaches more communal fellowship, like the eye for an eye, for instance. Like, it's not necessarily like, oh, you have damaged me personally, so now I must return that to you. That's what individualism would say. But communalism is we're all working together towards the same goal, and that's really what we are here. So there has to be a balance there, I think. And I think we get so indoctrinated in school with these things that we kind of forget to separate that sometimes from what God tells us. Not completely, but certainly to some extent. And then mob psychology. That's the idea that if everybody's doing it, you feel pressured into doing it too, or it comes naturally to do it too. And we can't give in to that. Let's go to James, the first chapter. And verse 27. And it says there, pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. So we are to be apart from the world in this matter. We have to make sure that what we're doing is right and that we're not just following the crowd, essentially, is what I'm saying there. The story of Daniel is a great example here. You know, the law was to pray to the king, but he said, no, that's not right. No, this isn't right. So he was willing to be imprisoned for that, but he still prayed to God. So, and that was right. And then, as I've been saying, it's all about attitude. It's all about our mental mindset when we're approaching these things. And then finally, as I said, we have a lot more responsibility, not only to control our actions, but to control our minds as well. So the point of everything I've been saying, it's a tall order. It's not easy. It's not just a set of rules that we have to follow. We have to make sure we're following the rules and we're following them in the right way, and we have the right attitude when we're approaching these things too. So that is basically a backdrop. So that was the first point. This is the same slide I had earlier. That was the first point. Now this second point, as I said, is probably the most important point I want us to get out of this, is that I think we forget about some things sometimes with some of the things I've been talking about before, and we need to see these things and decide for ourselves whether these things are right for us to be doing or not all the time. And then finally we'll go to making us better examples for those around. So these aren't lesser known sins, quote unquote. These are things we need to remember when looking at those lesser known sins. So again, the bandwagon appeal. We have to separate ourselves. We have to make sure, decide for ourselves what's right and not go with authority. Authoritative influence is an interesting one, I think, because you have a lot of examples in history of this, like the Nazis rationalized their killing of the Jews that way. They're like, we were just doing their jobs. They were telling us to do that. The My Lai massacre is during the Vietnam War, when the U.S. soldiers went into South Vietnam and were told to kill anybody they saw, and they ended up killing a lot of civilians, 300 to 400 civilians or something like that. And the rationale they said is, we were told anybody you see is Vietnam, so you kill them. But does that necessarily make it right? Let's turn to Luke chapter 6 and verse 39. And he spoke a parable to them. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into the ditch? So that's not an excuse, is what this is saying. If it were so, he would have been saying that the one leading the blind, the blind person leading the other blind person into the ditch, that person would have been guilty, but the person being led into the ditch would not be. But he's saying they will both fall into the ditch. So that's not an excuse. We have to actively search out the truth ourselves and decide for ourselves, not like authoritative influence. And this seems very elementary, right? All this I've been saying is like, you're probably like, well, yeah, I knew that already. But it's surprising how much we forget about this sometimes. And just simple examples, which next I'm going to go into, that really have a lot to do with this, that it's like, wow, I haven't thought about that point, you know? So, and then finally, we need to remember who else might be watching. Go with me to 2 Corinthians. Again, we've gone to this verse before, but I'd just like to go over it once again. Chapter 3, verse 2 here. You are our epistle written in our hearts, known and read by all men. It's very true that we are the only Bible some people may ever read. And we have to make sure in everything we do, even the smallest little things, that we're setting a good example for others. So now, on to the examples, and this is where it gets interesting. First example, sporting events. Let's turn to Colossians chapter 3 and verse 8. This is a very simple verse here. It just says, "But now you yourselves are to put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth." Being at some IU games has given me some interesting experiences. And I can say I've been guilty of some of these things myself. And that's why I think it's important to point these out, because if I've fallen into traps, chances are a lot of Christians have fallen into these traps. Everybody's yelling and angry at the refs and angry at the player, yelling hurtful things, cursing at them. How easy is it just to do that yourself? Just to start yelling? I've yelled angry things at refs and players, like, you're an awful person, and, you know, get your head out of your butt or whatever. You know, things like that. Like, that's not how Christians should be acting, is it? We should speak the truth in love. We should put away all this anger and wrath and malice. It's okay to cheer for our team. I don't think it's necessarily okay to be making personal remarks about the opposing team. And that's something we need to remember. And this goes back to that mob psychology. Everybody's doing it. It's hard to separate yourselves. Because if you're not doing it, you feel like you're not totally invested in the game, right? You can be totally invested in the game and be interested in what's going on without doing the things everybody else is doing. So that's, I think, one very important example that we might forget sometimes. Politics is a good one. The same verse that we just were at. Put off anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language. We can have a good rational discussion with somebody without resorting to anger and condemning somebody for what they believe. Condemning in an angry way, I mean, in a spiteful, hateful way. And this also goes with how we view politicians, I think, because politicians get a really bad rap. And I hope to go into politics possibly someday myself. And I know it probably tarnished my reputation, because it always does to people. But that's not, I don't think, how we should be. We should be respectful of our politicians, and we can respectfully disagree with people. I'm not saying we have to be like, oh, you're a great person. You can hate what they're doing, but you don't need to hate them. And that's, I think, with anybody. We can't hate people. We hate their actions. And I think it's like everybody's doing this, right? Everybody gets into mad arguments about this stuff. It's okay to get in rational arguments with people about these things, but when it gets to that level, that's where we need to watch it, to control both our physical actions and our minds as well, as I previously mentioned. Another interesting example, traffic rules. As I said, this lesson seems very light, very, like, why are we mentioning these things? Like, but here, I'm basically assuming that we already have a basic knowledge of what's right and wrong, right? So these are the things that we don't always look at that might trip us up. So traffic rules, the main thing here is that we're an example to others, right? And Romans chapter 13, verses 1 and 2 basically are the verses that say, submit yourselves to the authorities. Is this not a law? the speed limit is a law. Traffic rules are a law. Now, I'm not saying going 5 over the speed limit or whatever is a sin. If you're getting pulled over all the time on the side of the road breaking the laws, is that a good example to other people? That's something we don't always think about, I don't think. But that's a law just like any other law, right? Lying, and I'm not talking about conventional lying. This goes along with the authoritative influence thing I was talking about earlier. Let's turn to Luke chapter 7, verse 39. I think most of these are very basic verses that just form the background of what I'm trying to say. You know what? I don't think it's Luke chapter 7, 39. I don't think that's the right verse. But anyway, the point that we know that's wrong. There are plenty of accounts in the Bible that lying is wrong. But what if your boss tells you you need to lie to someone? When I was in marching band, one of my band directors told me to lie to my other band director about what kind of mallets I was using. Because he wanted me to use harder mallets, and my other band director wanted me to use softer mallets on my xylophone or whatever. It seems like a juvenile example, but I told him, I'm not going to lie. It's like, if you want to lie for me, that's fine. I'm not going to lie for you or for myself or whatever. It's like, okay, I'll lie for you then. So he did. But we need to watch out for those things. Even when the stakes are high, we have to make sure that we're not compromising our beliefs and our morals just for our own gain or to keep our position where we're at. So as I said, it's not conventional. I mean, we know lying's wrong. But there are certain situations I think we can fall into traps, like, oh, well, he's telling me to do this, so therefore I have to do this, you know, to keep my job or whatever. These morals are absolute. We can't be compromising our morals just for our own gain. Accidental theft. This is kind of a humorous one. I remember back when I was a child, we got home from Walmart one time, and hey, there's a pack of gum. We didn't buy a pack of gum. Just a pack of gum fell into the grocery bag somehow. So my mom proceeds to take it back to the store and return it. I'm like, Mom, it's a pack of gum. No one's going to care. But that taught me a really good lesson. I've heard this from other Christians as well, that magnitude should not be an issue. It's accidental theft, and therefore we should be returning these things, right? So Exodus chapter 20 and verse 15 is just the commandment, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal. We're not under the Ten Commandments, but we see plenty of examples where stealing is wrong. That's obvious. But we need to be watching out, even for accidental theft. The right thing to do is act. You know, I mean, I've heard people, I always laugh every time I hear in the news is somebody like, somebody stole from Kmart 99 cents worth of merchandise. Locked up in the security center. Yeah, there you go. But still, it matters. Even though you might think, you know, oh well, no one's going to be the wiser. People notice that. If you return that, the lady, I remember hearing a Christian saying one time, yeah, they went there and returned it, and the lady's like, you actually returned this? Like, they were surprised. They shouldn't be, but they were surprised. And that leaves a mark on people when you make the effort to do that. It really leaves a lasting mark on people, and we need to remember that. That even the smallest things we do can be a shining light to people. Being an attorney, this is what I aspire to be. And the main question here, I'm sure as you've already heard and everything, is if you're a defense attorney and you know someone is guilty, is it right to represent them? Or if you're a prosecutor and you know someone is not guilty, but your job is to prosecute them, what do you do then? I don't know that I have an exact answer for this, because in one aspect, you can represent someone fairly and let the law decide. The key there is fairly. There are a lot of antics and tricks that go on. There's a fine line there that you shouldn't try to weasel your way through there. But if you're giving an honest defense or giving an honest prosecution, there might be an argument for that. And I don't know that I have an honest answer for this, But this is the point, just to get us thinking about these things in our lives, about places in our lives that we might not always think about that are wrong for us. And I'm not saying this is wrong at all, but these are just my examples. I want you all to think of your own examples of making sure, even with these small little issues, they're still important for us to be good examples to other people in everything we do, right? Taxes. It's tax season, everybody. Yay. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 17 through 21 basically says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, render unto God what is God. Now, I'm also in accounting, so I'm getting introduced to some of this tax stuff, and there are certain money transactions, right, cash transactions that may or may not get recorded on your taxes and things like that. The point I'm trying to make is, if you know that something should be written on your taxes, even if nobody else cares, even if nobody else does it, the mob psychology, and nobody else is doing it, who cares? The government still says you're supposed to, even if the government's not necessarily watching, even if nobody else is watching. I'm not saying, like, you need to learn the tax code, because, like, I hope not everybody learns the tax code, otherwise I might be out of a job. But it's important for us to be honest in everything we do, and that includes our simple taxes. We need to say, this is honestly what I think I owe the government, based on what I know or what the person who I'm going to for help knows. I'm not hiding anything just because, oh, they won't ever find it, right? I mean, who cares? It's just some money transaction, right? God cares. Talking with other people, this is probably the most important one. And when I mean talking with other people, I mean talking with other people about God and about our beliefs and everything. So let's go to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15. And the verse here says, but speaking the truth in love may grow up in all things into him who is head, Christ. Point here is speaking the truth in love. You can speak the truth and not do it spitefully and angrily. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 3 through 5. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite! First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. And then finally, 2 Timothy, chapter 2, beginning in verse 24. And a servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient, in humility correcting those who are in opposition. If God perhaps will grant them repentance, so that they may know the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him to do his will. I just recently, in the last few weeks or so, one of my friends from high school declared on Facebook that he's an atheist. He says, I don't need it. He says, it's fine if for anybody else if they think they need God. I don't need God. Somebody else replies to him then, cursing him out, telling him he's never going to get a job, that, you know, he's an awful person and this stuff. And those just made me think of these verses, that we need to be patient in correcting the erring, and we don't need to be spite. We need to speak the truth in love. First, we need to check ourselves and first worry about ourselves, make sure we are in a position to be correcting the error and giving advice. And certainly encourage this as much as possible. We need to be going out and talking to people. People will respond a lot better if we're not spiteful or angry at them. I mean, the guy on IU's campus, it gives Christians a bad name when you're just condemning people. You can condemn someone without doing it angrily, is my point, and because they will immediately shy away from you. It just doesn't work. So that's the point there. We need to make sure we're good examples for other people. And people will respond to this. They'll be like, oh, this is a rational person I can have a good discussion with. And that's what we need to make sure we are presenting to people. And here, I ask you all, what else is there? These are some examples I've seen that I've thought, wow, that could be easy to trip us up sometimes, right? There are others. Everybody has their own examples. Everybody's had their own experiences. So the whole purpose of this lesson, essentially, if you don't get anything else out of this, watch out for the small things. Watch out for those small things that will trip you up. Make sure in everything you're doing that it's right and that you can justify it within yourself and within God's word, that you're setting a good example for others. So we've gone through the first 2 points there, and now we're on to the third point, making us better examples for those around us. And this is a very easy, very short wrap-up, essentially. So first of all, we know God's watching. God's watching us all the time. He knows what we're doing, even if no one around us sees it. So the point is, doing what's right, even when no one's watching you. You know, I thought about putting the picture from George Orwell's 1984, Big Brother is watching you. You know, we don't have Big Brother watching us all the time, but we do have our Father is watching us all the time, right? And we know that other people are watching us too. Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 13, says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Even when we may not think anybody else sees us, even the smallest little thing, returning a pack of gum to the supermarket that accidentally fell into your basket, that can leave an impression on people that, wow, this person really cares about doing the right thing at all costs. It costs more to drive home, to drive there and drive back than it did for the gum itself, right? But that's the attitude we should have. It's not about the physical law itself all the time. It's about our attitude towards that and how we approach those things. And that's what I want to get across this morning. And then finally, as I said, just think about your own examples of small things that might trip us up you've thought of over the years. And just remember that we need to make sure we're setting a good example for others in everything we do, the big things and the small things. And I'm not trying to highlight these things as like, oh, these are the main things we must do to reach heaven. But they're still an important part of it, a part that we don't always see. And that's the part I'm trying to get across here. So I'd like to sum this up in one sentence, because I think it's easier to remember one sentence than a whole entire lesson. But we need to be sure we are following God's laws always without falling into traps, because God and other people are watching us. Very simple statement. So that's it for this morning. But as always, we offer the invitation. Always the invitation is offered, but now we find a convenient time to especially offer the invitation for those who are either not yet members of God's church. We offer you the opportunity to come and be baptized so that you might have remission of sins, children of God. And also, if you are already a Christian and you need the prayers of the congregation, we ask that you come forward at this time as we stand and as we sing.
There's a fountain free.